As a young teenager, Katie Davis took a giant step of faith when she moved to Africa to care for the needs of orphans. She knew Jesus had called her there, but she didn't realize all that call would mean for her life.
Yeah, after about 4 months, I would sit in my bed and just cry. Just go, oh, what did I do? Because at that point, I knew Jesus had wrecked my life. There wasn't ever going to be a way that I could go back to my life that was normal. I wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to live that way anymore. And I knew that I wouldn't, but I kind of wanted to.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. We'll hear more from Katie Davis today about how Jesus wrecked her life in a good way. Stay tuned. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You remember, Dennis, that our daughter, Amy, spent a couple of years after college in Southeast Asia. She called us during her senior year and said, I'm thinking I want to spend time in Southeast Asia after college. And we as parents kind of wrestled with that decision ultimately.
Did you immediately applaud that?
We did not immediately embrace that.
Took Mary a little Ann processing. Had a little bit of problem with
it, maybe? We just, both of us, had to kind of pray our way through that. What she never did, she never called us in the middle of her time over there and said, I've decided to become a mother. That would have been a whole new level of what is going on in the life of our daughter if she'd done that.
And we have a young lady who at the age of, well, Katie, how old were you when you decided to become a mom?
19. It was when I fostered my first little girls.
Okay. Decided to become a mom when she was 19 years of age. Her name's Katie Davis. She's written a book called Kisses from Katie. She serves Jesus Christ in Uganda, caring for now 13 children, count them, that she's in the process of becoming their mother, right? Adopting them. And she is the director of a ministry called Amazima. Is that right?
Yes.
Did I get it right?
You got it.
Good. I want to ask you to read the first two paragraphs of your book.
Sure.
Because I think this kind of sets apart how your life is making a difference in the lives of a lot of children.
Okay. I never meant to be a mother. I mean, I guess I did. Not right now, though. Not before I was married. Not when I was 19. Not to so, so many little people. Thankfully, God's plans do not seem to be much affected by my own. I never meant to live in Uganda, a dot on the map in East Africa, on the opposite side of the planet from my family and all that is comfortable and familiar. Thankfully, God's plans also happened to be much better than my own. You see, Jesus wrecked my life.
Yeah, he really wrecked it. He called you to give up an easygoing life as a teenager in Nashville, Tennessee. Wrecked your parents' lives, like Bob was talking about, with his daughter going overseas. And you went there for 1 year. Mm-hmm. Well, you ended up staying, and you encountered a number of little girls, but there was one who really grabbed your heart. It was the first little girl that you decided to adopt. Explain mm-hmm. the story, because this is really an interesting story, how you came about meeting her. It really came about through her sister.
Yeah. So I was living at the orphanage, had been working there for a while, had been teaching there for a while, and had also started to see a lot of the children in my class would come to school a little bit and then would not come to school for a while. So I started asking, why are these children in and out of school all the time? And the pastor who ran the school said, well, they can't always pay for their school fees. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's terrible. I didn't know that the school was so expensive, you know, and it's not expensive by our standard at all. And I also recognized during my time there that a lot of the children who were living in the orphanage had living family members who would come and visit, who would see them, who seemed to love and care about them. But yet the children lived in this institution, and they lived there so that they could go to school and so that they could get their medical care and the food that they needed and things like that. And so I and my translator had started a small outreach just with 10 people to try to keep a couple of these children going to school but not living in the orphanage. We were paying for them to go to school, but they were staying with their families. And so I had met Agnes and Mary and Scovia because they were children that were on our list of maybe these children would be eligible to stay living with their grandmother. Their grandmother really didn't know what to do with them, was thinking about putting them in the orphanage. Several weeks later, Oliver called me and said, "Oh my goodness, we have to go visit this little girl. There's been a storm. Her grandmother's house has collapsed on her. She's in the hospital. We've got to go visit her in the hospital." So we went to visit Agnes, and she had been smashed under this brick wall in the storm. The houses are just made of these mud bricks, and she's just laying there, tiny, in this hospital bed. And her collarbone was broken. And when we went to the hospital, they said, "Well, we can't treat her." And I said, "Well, why? Why can't you treat her? Why is she just laying in this bed?" And they said, "Well, there's no one here to pay for her medical treatment. And so unless you can pay for your medical treatment, you can't get any. So she just is here taking up space." And I said, "Oh, I'll pay for her medical treatment." You know, it's the grand total of like $30 or $40, which for her extended family members, that $30, $40 would have just wiped out their money for the year, really. I said, "Well, I'll tell them, I'll pay. Like, whatever it is, do what they need to do." And so it started with just paying for Agnes's medical treatment. And Oliver said, "Well, she has two sisters." And I said, "Well, Oliver, you have to go get them." I had started renting a little house outside of the orphanage because in order to have this outreach registered as a ministry, we needed an office space. So I had this little teeny house that we were renting. And I said, "You know, they can spend the night at my house." Their grandmother was very, very ill and actually ended up passing away a couple months later. And she said, "Yeah, that would be great if they could spend the night at your house while we figure out what's going to happen." So they spent the night with me, and we would go and visit Agnes in the hospital all the time and make sure she was okay. And then Agnes was discharged from the hospital, and we said, "Well, now where do they go?" She couldn't really walk. She had just all this bruising, and it was very difficult for her to walk, and her collarbone was broken. So she was just really needed to lay in bed all the time. And I said, "Well, of course, she can come and stay with us while we figure out what we're going to do with these little girls." And really kind of felt like the Lord starting to impress upon me, "This is your family." And I remember one morning I was just praying through this, "God, where do they go? Their grandmother is so sick, and I don't really know if they're going to be able to move back in with her. And there aren't other relatives that will take care of them." And Scovia, who was 5 at the time, walked into my room and she said, "Mommy, can I call you Mommy?" And I remember just, I mean, I had just been praying, "Lord, would you show me what to do?" Right? And he said, "Sure, I will show you." So Scovia came in and she did. She called me Mommy. And I remember just in my heart, just knowing, well, that was the answer to that.
Okay, I got to know about the phone conversation you had with your mom and dad when you said, "Guess what happened when I was praying this morning?"
You know, I don't even remember the conversation. I'm sure it was tentative because I know that they were like ready for me to come home from my year in Uganda and have this like very normal life. And so this was changing things.
That must have been like a bomb. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're expecting you to come home and you go, "Hey."
I think I'm leaning toward foster care that will lead towards adoption, that will lead towards permanent family and a permanent residence here. And I struggled, and I think we all run into this at some point where we think maybe we can live in both worlds, right? Maybe we can do what Jesus is asking us to do and still have all our stuff that we don't want to give up. Whatever that is, whether that's the dream of college or whether that's material things or whether that's a relationship that we're not quite ready to walk away from yet. I think all of us at some point go through the struggle of what is it that I really have to give up to be all in? And so...
Well, and your year in Uganda had not been just one continuous picnic. I mean, you had been lonely and you had, I'm sure you had to get used to the fact that when you were hungry for ice cream, you couldn't just hop in the car and drive down to the ice cream place and get some ice cream, right?
Right. I think it is a good thing that I am so stubborn. And it's not always a good thing. It sometimes is a very bad thing. But I think I would have...
I'm just looking at your friends in the studio. They're all nodding their heads at that, by the way.
They know. I think I would have come home, but I didn't want to hear the people who said, "I told you so, little rich white girl from Brentwood."
Your stubbornness kept you from going back.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't going to come back here and hear people say, "I knew that you couldn't live in Africa." And so there were days when I was so lonely. I mean, I lived in a room that was not a whole lot bigger than this table that we're sitting at. My bed was a single bed. So think of the size of a single bed. And in order to shut the door to my room, I had to have my feet on my bed. If my feet were on the side of the bed, there wasn't room for the door to shut. So the room was not much bigger than my bed. And that was very different from the lifestyle that I was accustomed to. And there were times, I mean, I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. And my heart was there, but it was also different.
You said you slept under a mosquito net, but that didn't keep the lizards and the ants out of your bed. And you had a rat, you said, that was the size of a kitten.
Oh, yeah. A big rat.
Where did he live?
Well, he lived in the bathroom, so I just got in the habit of not going to the bathroom at night. I remember the first night that I went to the bathroom and he ran by and I thought, okay, note to self, go to the bathroom before bed. Don't go to the bathroom again.
Okay, I think you must be really, really stubborn because just what you're describing here, I can see somebody going, you know, I'm glad I came and spent my year here and did the work and invested, and a part of my heart will always be here, but I'm ready for a little Nashville comfort. I'm ready for a soft bed and no rats and ice cream when I want it.
Oh, yeah. After about 4 months, I would sit in my bed and just cry. Just go, oh, what did I do? Because at that point, I knew... my heart was stuck. I mean, there wasn't ever going to be a way. I read it. Jesus had wrecked my life. There wasn't ever going to be a way that I could go back to my life that was normal and do it. I wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to live that way anymore. And I knew that I wouldn't, but I kind of wanted to.
Sure.
You went on to adopt two more girls a few months later. And
were mom and dad, they must have gotten to the point where it was like, okay,
what's next?
We're with you on this, right? When you said, I'm going to adopt these three, they kind of came around and said, it's your life, right?
Kind of. I mean, they always asked good questions that were important, you know, in the way that a parent does of, mm-hmm. Now, are you sure? Because you know that
this?
That means this, 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 and this. And I wasn't sure, but. I thought I knew a lot. So I said, like, yes, I'm sure. I've thought this through.
By the age of 19, you were a mother of six. Mm-hmm. And you had you'd taken on some responsibilities, so much so you needed to go raise some money for your work among orphans in Uganda. And you were getting ready to leave, and Agnes... I assume it's the same one who was almost crushed by the wall that fell in on her. Agnes came to you and told you you couldn't leave. You want to share that story with our listeners?
Agnes had just kind of finally adjusted after a few months to life with a mom, life with a home, life with a family. And as I shared a little bit earlier, I had started what started as a very small ministry. I just said, you know, these kids shouldn't have to live at the orphanage if they have family members who want to take care of them. We have to figure out a way that we can pay for their schooling and pay for their food and pay for their medical care, and they can live with their biological family, whether that's a mom or a dad or an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent. And so I had called home to my parents and said, hey, can I have, you know, $200? We'll send these kids to school. And we've got great friends and neighbors and community around us where I grew up in Brentwood, who also said, like, yeah, we'll give you some money if that can help pay for some children to go to school. And so we had grown from 10 children who were being what we called sponsored to stay in their families, to we had about 40 now, and then 40 turned into about 100. And so we had 100 children who were signed up to go to school. And we got through the first term of school okay. And then it was about time for second term. And it was like, oh, we don't quite have enough money to send these children back for second term. And we need to do that. We've committed to saying, you get to go to school and stay with your family. Your family does not have to give you up or put you in an institution so that you can have these basic needs met. And so I knew I had to go back to the States and do some fundraising. And Agnes just begged and pleaded, no, you can't go, you can't go, you can't go, you can't go. I must have said something like, well, sweetie, someone has to raise some money so that we can continue to eat. I'm sure that was my comment to her. And so she ran outside and she got some grass and she said, well, I will eat grass and you do not go.
That was her way of trying to get you to stay there. Uh-huh. She didn't want you to leave.
No. So then I knew I was like really stuck. Hmm.
And 100 grew to what size now?
We have 721 children who are currently sponsored by Amazima, and that means that their school fees are paid for. They're provided with meals. At school, we pay for them to have lunch, and then we send them home with some food so that they can have dinner for their families. They're provided with any medical care that they need. This enables them to live with their family members. A lot of them are still children who have been orphaned a lot by HIV and AIDS.
Well, you did end up coming back to the States to raise some money. And while you were back here, your friend, who evidently must have been helping you run the village, ended up taking another child in.
Yes.
You want to tell our listeners about your first conversation with a little girl named Joyce?
Yes. So Christine, a great friend of mine, she's still on our staff. She had moved into our house and was helping with just day-to-day stuff. She's a year younger than I am. And she just, I mean, she taught me so much about how to live like a Ugandan, really, and helped me out with the girls. And so I had left her and another friend there at our home with my 6 girls and had gone home to do some fundraising. And while I was gone, received a phone call from her. And she said, there's this little girl, she's really in need of a place to go. You know, she doesn't have anyone caring for her at home. Would it be okay if she came to live with us? And, you know, at this point, you're kind of doing, oh, 6, 7. I mean, I've kind of built my life around this anyway, and she doesn't have anywhere to go. Of course, she can come and stay, and we'll figure it out when I get home. We'll figure out if it's permanent or if it's transitory or what that looks like. And so I remember she called me, and she said, hello, Mommy. And I'm sure she had heard, you know, the other girls in our house talking about me as like, oh, there's this lady, her name's Mommy, you know, she'll come back and she feeds us, you know, whatever. She said, hello, Mommy. Thank you for food today. And I just remember how that struck me. Just sitting on this side of things in America and having just probably eaten lunch or whatever, going, oh my goodness. Thank you for food today. Like, this is what we're looking at. This is what we're dealing with. People who don't even always have the guarantee of food every day. I just remember how excited I was to get home and to meet her.
Speaking of food today, how many children are estimated to be on the streets?
Oh, my goodness.
In Uganda?
We would have to look it up. It's so many.
Tens of thousands.
Yes.
Who don't have food to eat, mm-hmm. like Joyce thanked you for.
Yeah.
Let alone someone to call mommy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what led you ultimately to say yes to not only the first six, seven, but now how many children are in your family or in the process of coming into your family as a 25-year-old young lady?
13. I have 13 foster daughters, all of whom are kind of at different processes in the paperwork of being finally legally adopted, but in my heart, I mean, are all the way adopted. They are my children.
I think it's a great picture, Bob, of a young lady who exhorts all of us to step out in faith, looking at the needs that surround us and follow God's call and be obedient to that. And just as Katie has shared, going all in, not doing it halfway, partway. I'm just wondering if you ever say no.
I'm learning.
But you're pretty stubborn.
Yes.
I think there is a stubborn streak necessary to get to where Katie has gotten. And I want to encourage our listeners to get a copy of the book that she's written called Kisses from Katie, A Story of Relentless Love and Redemption. We've got the book in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can go online at familylifetoday.com to order a copy. Again, the title of the book, Kisses from Katie. And the website is familylifetoday.com. You can also call 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. If you'd like to request a copy of the book, 1-800-FL-TODAY is the number to call, and we'll send a copy of Katie's book out to you.
You know, what we've talked about here today, Bob, is not unusual for Family Life Today. We are all about giving voice to those who have none, the orphan. And our listeners, anybody who listens to Family Life Today knows that we have consistently championed the orphan before the Christian community, believing that the church really has the capability of addressing issues around adoption, foster care, and orphans as no other organization in the world. In fact, Family Life helped start the original meeting that ultimately became the Christian Alliance for Orphans, which we started back 10 years ago, had 35 folks at the first meeting here at Family Life, and this year we had almost 3,000 at Willow Creek with people from 35 countries showing up. So we are about championing those who have no voice, orphans. And there's a lot of great stories, but one I have to tell. A woman told me she was listening to Family Life Today. We were talking about the orphan. We were taking her near the needs of the orphan. And she said, I was running an errand one night listening to your broadcast. And she said, I had to stay in the Walmart parking lot and finish listening to the broadcast. And by the time I finished listening, she said, I realized God was calling us to adopt. Mm. And I just want to turn to the listener at this point and say, if we're going to stand by the orphan, if we're going to stand alongside you and your marriage, your family, and encourage you to take steps of faith as well, then right now would be the time to make a generous gift to Family Life. We got a great matching opportunity that we need to take full advantage of. And Bob, we need more listeners to step up and say, I stand with you guys because you stand alongside me and my marriage and family, giving us practical biblical help and hope for my marriage and family.
We have had some friends of the ministry who have agreed that they will match every donation we receive between now and the end of the month on a dollar-for-dollar basis, up to a total of $2 million. So you call today and make a $20 donation, it's automatically a $40 donation. Or you make a $100 donation, it's a $200 donation. And so we're asking you to be as generous as you can be so that we can take full advantage of this matching gift. And we hope you will do it today. Hope you'll go to familylifetoday.com, click in the upper right-hand corner of the screen where it says, I Care, make an online donation, or call 1-800-FL-TODAY. You can make a donation over the phone, and it counts if you mail your donation to us. Our mailing address is Post Office Box 7111, Little Rock, Arkansas, and our zip code is 72223. We do hope to hear from you. I want to say thanks in advance for your financial support of this ministry. And we want to encourage you to join us again tomorrow. Katie Davis will be back. We'll talk more about how God is using her to to care for the needs of orphans in Africa. Hope you can tune in for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.